are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. www.teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
And what I love about Pickertail is for those parents who are not confident readers themselves, they can participate because the stress around I'm not confident myself about what this book is saying is taken away because the book will read to them if that's what the user wants, which is just beautifully inclusive in a way that I don't know anything else does.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Talkit, interview Jim Knight and Chanel Fusco. Jim is a former Minister for Schools and Learning and current Non-Executive Director for Nord Angular Education and the EACT Multi Academy. Chanel was the UK Sales Director for the free app Pickertail, which helps children become better readers. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are literacy levels in the UK, parents reading to their children, and the benefits of Pickertail for children, families and teachers.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am super excited because I'm joined by Jim Knight and Chanel Fusco. Jim, some of you will know who works in education, appear in the House of Lords. I'll ask Jim to introduce himself in a moment. And Chanel, who is the sales director at Pickertail, a brilliant app, a free app that offers loads of reading books for parents and teachers. Can I ping over to you, Jim? Could you just introduce yourself, your role, and the things that you're up to day to day, if that's possible?
Of course. Thanks, Ross. So Jim Knight, a.k.a. Lord Knight of Weymouth, a one-time MP and schools minister, you know, eons ago, and since then been working mostly commercially in education with TES, which is where I got to know Chanel, but in my post-TES world, back doing a little bit in Parliament, but also I'm a non-exec director of three companies. I advise Nord Anglia, I chair the EACT Multi-Academy chain, and advise one or two others along the way around schools, teachers, education, technology.
There you go. Many different hats. And Chanel, how about you? Your role in Pickertail, and give us a synopsis of what Pickertail is.
Yeah, so I'm the UK sales director at Pickertail. You know, we're a global organisation. We're founded from Norway originally, and it's a platform essentially that helps kids become better readers. So we're helping teachers access hundreds and hundreds of resources that truly engage kids in the reading journey. Like Jim said, we met at TES, so I was the general manager for the UK West and Wales there, doing recruitment and selling other SaaS solutions into schools.
Yeah, and I guess between the three of us, you know, all that online analytical behaviour about what teachers click and times of year and seasons and what works, I guess between us we've got quite a lot of bit of data in our head stored about analytics and what works from a test or a teacher toolkit perspective. It's really interesting. So we'll come back to Pickertail, but Jim, can I just pop over to you? Before we go into the details of Pickertail, if we just take the theme of literacy, could I ask you two questions? One, the general state of the nation in terms of literacy, pupils or adults, and then what has happened as a result of the pandemic?
Some of this will be my impression as much as what I can pull off the data from, you know, up my sleeve somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
but you know, it's informed by the work on the literacy or party parliamentary group, as well as, you know, the various things I talked about. My sense is, and we saw this dramatically in COVID, that the disadvantage gap really comes to play, and we see disproportionate numbers of young people and adults from disadvantaged backgrounds who struggle with their reading. It's still a problem. I don't know the exact numbers, but it's still a problem for a significant number of children, young people and adults. And we have a lot to do across all three of those sectors. You know, the I think the literacy hour, and then one of the things that Nick Gibbon, his very long tenure, did was champion the use of synthetic phonics. I think it was a little bit of one club golfing, but nevertheless, I think it has made a difference to have a more systematic way of teaching reading. Those things have made a difference to children in the earlier years. But I think we've still got quite a long way to go in terms of the catch-up for young adults and young people who don't make it with confident reading in primary. A lot of that will be associated with their parents struggling to read with them at home because they themselves have reading problems. And I think we're quite a long way from being able to make a tangible difference around those adults that, I mean, they feel really self-conscious and shamed, if you like, if they know that they're struggling with their reading, and they won't really admit it. And it's very difficult to engage them and get them to, first of all, front up that they've got a problem, because it's only when you front it up that you then seek the help.
Yeah, I was looking at the stats on the National Literacy Trust. I think 18 million, or numeracy is 18 million adults. The literacy, just a quick check on the literacy trust organisation, 7.1 million adults in England alone. And approximately 1.5 across the other UK nations.
And of course, Ross, you know, however brilliant podcasts like this one may be, reading is just the most essential skill to be able to access learning. And we know, especially with the dynamic nature of the labour market and people being de-skilled in their jobs and so on and so forth, that we've got to keep learning. And so not only does that disadvantage children if they're struggling with their reading in terms of their other learning, but it will disadvantage them for the rest of their lives. And so it's sort of a fundamental importance, because, you know, if you looked at it really crudely as an economic problem, the nation can't afford to look after all those people who can't look after themselves because they can't really access work because they can't read.
I was reading the Levelling Up paper published by Policy Exchange just before Christmas about trying to tackle, you know, that postcode lottery, I suppose, and literacy featured in there. Sorry, Chanel, I interrupted you.
No, I was going to just present a little bit of a stat, really, that I came across the other day. At 3 years old, for the disadvantaged segment, you know, they're hearing 30 million less words than kids from, you know, more well-to-do sort of background, and the kids that are actually being supported with their reading day-to-day at the Epic, one of our competitors, reported this stat. They're reading on average 41.3 books a year, whereas disadvantaged kids are reading about 13. So that's a massive gap. And when Jim talks about closing this gap, it's, as educators, what can we do to fully support these children? And it's about, you know, getting them to access their own favourite books, you know, giving them the agency and autonomy to be able to explore non-fiction titles that they're interested in, have content that's around solving mysteries, you know, just making it more engaging for
them. I'm reminded of a podcast I had with Dylan William about a year ago, and he said, brilliant, he'd kind of worked out that the average adult is likely to read about 4,000 books in their lifetime. So if you take those 4,000 books, what books are you going to read is quite an important question. And then if we go to our kind of life in schools, the selection of books that we might deliver to our pupils, in some cases where parents can't, would be quite an important decision. One more question, Jim, in terms of the insights you see at the House of Lords, what kind of things are being discussed under the umbrella of literacy at the moment? Is there anything you can tell us?
Well, I guess the honest answer is there's nothing that comes instantly to mind. There's an obvious preoccupation at the moment with managing our way through COVID, you know, putting aside who's having parties where, and the fundamental issues around child development that has been stunted by for some children, by no means all children. I think teachers and learners have been heroic in the way that they've adapted during the last 2 years. But there's no doubt that for the more disadvantaged pupils, they're more likely to then have suffered in terms of their child development. Now, at the very early years, that's some basic child development around social skills, you know, kids coming into reception still wearing nappies, mm-hmm. All the way through to the beginnings of being literate. Mm-hmm. And that's something that there is conversation about here, about, you know, we're nervous about what we're supposed to call it, you know, you know, because mm-hmm. we know that people don't like catch up and they don't like some of those other phrases, but there is a developmental loss that people are really concerned about, particularly as it's hitting the most disadvantaged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Chanel, can you give us a flavour of what Picatel is and how it might help, I guess, in particular, the conversation we're having, our disadvantaged pupils, perhaps?
Yeah, so Picatel is a reading platform for kids between the ages of 4 and 11. It's enriched with content that's non-fiction, fiction-led titles as well. It's the books on there are audio narrated. We cover non-curriculum topics as well that really help to engage and help teachers to align their topics of literature to these types of topics of books that we're creating. We own our own publishing arm, so we're able to give rich content into schools, these resources completely for free, and you can use it on a on any app, so Android mm-hmm. app, iOS app as well, and then the teacher gets a dashboard whereby they're enabled to set children homework so that they can independently read from home as well. What we're trying
and what's
to do
the database of number of books that you've got that are freely available for parents and teachers to use?
So at the moment we've got 800 free books that are levelled from level 1 to level 8, and they follow the Lexile levelling system, and it's really, really easy to use. It focuses on the child's age, and then it makes it appropriate for that child's reading experience and level, so the parent's able to get involved in the journey from home, but equally the teacher's able to really take control of that and support that as well. And the thing that I hear from schools the most on my travels is that actually being able to see what the child has read without having to wait for the parent to complete the book at the end of the day, of the evening, to evidence that the child has read, has actually saved them so much time.
Mm-hmm. So a great win for parents too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And they're able to, you know, have conversation with kids the next day and say, I've seen that you've read the Sustainable Development Goals 1 on poverty. Mm-hmm. What did that mean to you?
Now, I'll tell you an interesting story. It might be with the friends I keep, but I've got one or two friends that are, you know, well-to-do, you know, good intentions with their children at school. But I'm really shocked when I say, do you read to your kids? And they tell me no. I find that fascinating and quite shocking. And if this is people who are, you know, got a roof over their head, so to speak, then, you know, going back to that disadvantaged context, if you haven't got your food and water, then you've got no chance of ever picking up a book.
And Ross, that's one of the things I love about Picatel. You know, as a parent, and I'm a retread now with a 10-year-old stepdaughter, and and I still read to her. We've just been reading The Boy Called Christmas together. Nice. She'll read a bit and I'll read a bit, and you know, and it's just a lovely way to end their day. It's a lovely part of my evening.
Yeah,
and that's always been the case. And what I love about Picatel is for those parents who are not confident readers themselves, they can participate, because the stress around I'm not confident myself about what this book is saying is taken away, because the book will read to them if that's what mm-hmm. the user wants, which is just beautifully inclusive in a way that I don't know anything else does.
Yeah, I guess that it has that phonetically karaoke style text, doesn't it, Chanel? I think.
Yeah, you can either slow it down or speed it up. You know, it's great for children.
Great for adults who struggle with reading too, I suspect.
It is, yeah. And where we're finding that actually, once a child is bringing that home, especially kids from an EAL background, it's actually supporting the wider family as well. Mm-hmm. So it's having much greater impact mm-hmm. than we actually thought it would do. It's a great feature. And also, you know, if the child wants to independently read, they can turn that feature off. But at any point, if they're struggling on a particular word, they can click it and it sounds it out for them. That's another powerful feature.
Thank you. Jim, can I ask what your role is at Picatel? You know, why you're on an advisory board? I suspect the answers are literacy and all those. But Can we unpick your kind of role working alongside Picatel?
Of course. So I'm, as you suggested in your question, my role is as a member of the advisory board at Picatel, which Chanel's just put together. And that's and both ambassadorial, you know, going out and talking on Picatel's behalf, normally as a double act with Chanel, and then also providing some advice, particularly, I think, you know, because of my work with EACT, my work with Nord Anglia, I'm trying to get as close to schools and teachers as I can, just making sure that as the product and Picatel develops, it's still squarely there as something that the users of the product, who aren't necessarily the decision makers who choose to adopt the product, but mm-hmm. that the users are really having their needs met and the problems that they have being solved. And so I'm, the reason for doing it, Ross, is I love the product. You know, I've got lots of people who want me to work with them, and I'll go with it if I think that they've got a great
product. I'm sure you do. And, you know, your insights with EdTech and stuff, and we'll know that we need particularly EdTech products to be very workable for teachers in terms of reducing workload. Chanel, can I put you on the spot? How does your software make the life of a teacher easier?
It's really easier to get a view of the whole class and their reading time spent as an individual, on an individual level, also as a cohort level as well. And I mentioned earlier, you know, tracking the parental engagement there is quite difficult, yet they just get it at the click of a button. You know, assigning a book is so much easier. I mean, there's one in five primary schools, the NLT has reported, that don't even have a library. So the fact that they've got 800 titles at the fingers of their tips and they can just click through and say, okay, that's for a five-year-old, I'll set that.
That's I mean, it's quite a shocking that library stat, isn't it? And plus libraries in our communities. Yeah. Sorry, Jim.
Yeah,
and another feature that I really like is a teacher can ask the whole class to read a single title, but it will differentiate according to the reading ability. And so you'll have more vocabulary for the more advanced readers in a class. So it's inclusive in that everybody is reading the same title and seeing the same images, and yet it's still able to adapt according to the reading ability of the kids.
And, and I guess that online kind of technology allows the teacher to track, you know, their engagement, how far they're reading, whereas on a physical book, you don't have that data, so to speak, unless you all read, you know, my memories from school, we all read the same passage together, et cetera. Jim, how do you feel that Picatel can make a big difference, you know, in your advisor role, you know, looking at their software today? How do you see your expertise developing it, taking it further? And Chanel, just before I ask Jim that question, how many people are using Picatel at the moment?
We've got 34,000 active users, so pupils that are engaging and reading.
So Jim, so how do we get you know, let's go big, how do we get 17 million adults accessing reading?
Worth saying, 34,000 from a standing start 6 months ago, so you know, that's pretty impressive. Incredible. And it shows how compelling the product is. Obviously, the size of what we're chasing after, because we're not just England-based, we're not just UK-based, you know, it's a global business, is massive. And I think, yeah, part of it is just awareness. You know, as you said, it's a free product for schools with all of the Picatel content. There's other content as well, which some children find really engaging because it's content like Marvel and Disney and some of that. So they can, you know, all that stuff that they might be consuming on Disney Plus, they can then also read about. Now that comes at a cost, and some parents are choosing to pay for that. And you know, some of that can add some engagement. And the more of those sorts of titles that we can get in, I think there's something really interesting then about taking books to where people are rather than dragging people to books. And that's the core of what the
product is. Well, I was going to ask the question, you know, I was going to ask the question personally. You know, we've all grown up where we have to hold a book. you know, with digital technology all around us, what's your preference today, Jim? Are you a bit of a mixed blended approach with your digital devices, or do you like picking up a book?
I am blended. You know, if I, the last book I finished was Where the Crawdads Sing.
Was it physical or digital?
And that was physical. But digitally, when I'm commuting into Parliament on the train, I'm reading Tim Brighouse and Mick Waters' new book about schooling on a Kindle app on my phone, of all things. On my Kindle at home, I am reading Middlemarch by George Eliot, because I thought I should go back to a classic. Also by my bedside, which I pick up occasionally, is Chris Packham's book about the environment and COVID and getting closer to nature. So,
how about you,
and that's a physical book.
I do love a physical book. So right now I'm reading The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. And I'm really enjoying that, and I'm enjoying, you know, turning the page. But I am actually an audiobook listener. So
I was going to ask the question, if you listen to a book, is that reading or listening reading? Or what's the word for you're still reading, but you're listening to it?
I don't know what the word is, but I'm enjoying it. You know, so I tap into all my TED Talks and things like that. I prefer to really listen to that when I'm driving, as opposed to watching it as a video or something like that.
I suppose that auditory process is still developing your literacy under the the umbrella of speaking, listening, writing, reading, etc. If I answer the question, I'm reading Inventing Ourselves by Sarah Jane Blackmore, the teenage brain scientist. And I've got this to hand. This is my doctoral troubles, looking at social media research methods. That's a big one. So that's my physical one, because I have to reference it. And then I'm trying to tackle Penny Mordaunt's new book on post-Brexit. Have seen that was published just before Christmas.
I should say the other physical books that I've been reading, with Coco, my stepdaughter. So when she finishes the latest Percy Jackson, I will pick that up and rattle through that in a day or two, just so that we're reading some of the same things and we can talk about what she's reading.
So, Jim, let me ask you, let's go back to the hard questions. What are your recommendations for people watching this in terms of, raising the profile of reading with disadvantaged communities, parents, pupils? You know, Chanel made that stat about some schools don't have libraries, etc. Jim, any recommendations?
Well, look, I think make it as easy as possible for people to read is a sort of really good starting point, and Picatel's part of that, and libraries are another part of that, and it might be that libraries become places where you borrow devices as much as borrow books, so that you can then access some of these things. But then think about, you can make a logical case for reading, this is really important to your future, etc. But I think what we start to understand about behavior change is you've also got to make a case that's emotional. And what's the emotional reason for reading? And that's why I go back to that beautiful moment in a day when you're reading together as a parent with children. And it can be equally a beautiful moment in school where you have reading volunteers or...
The reading corner on the carpet, cross your legs at the end of the day, reading the story.
There's just a beautiful intimacy in a highly appropriate way, but an intimacy about getting lost in a world that a book can take you to together that I would just want to sell to everyone as something, it's there for you every day. Go there.
And Chanel, back to you, that 1 in 5 stat. So, your insights or, you're getting into schools occasionally, you see great libraries, you see people interested in the product. Any recommendations for those schools that are struggling to develop a database of books? You've got the Picatel app, but what kind of things have you seen online as well as physically?
Yeah, I've seen a lot. There's a big movement, actually, just from people on Twitter that are actually just collecting books, being donated books to go and give into schools and stuff. I think they're really good initiatives. They're strong, they're promotional as well. But I just think, we've got an issue around this devices, access to devices as well. Still don't know the full numbers across the UK schools in England. I'd love that data. But I think, you know, giving children the option to explore different stuff in the way that they want to. So even just reading crisp packet, the back of a crisp packet, you know, anything like that, it's still some form of reading, being creative.
And Jim, you might know, I live in West Yorkshire now. I left London in the pandemic. So I find myself in deep in the valley occasionally where there is no phone signal. And I'm reminded of a stat that Chanel said, you know, I can't tweet down in the valley, but about 8% of the UK is still not connected to a broadband connection, I believe. Is that right?
That's true.
That would be about right.
And I'm also reminded of a great phrase by E.D. Hirsch. So you know the term cultural capital. He's synonymous with cultural literacy, and Nick Gibb was a big fan of his. But when I had a conversation with him a couple of years ago, he said this phrase I've never forgotten: make your classroom a speech community. And going back to that emotional strand, Jim, you know, we can't leave oracy, you know, literacy to chance. It's something that you need to teach your children at home as well as in class. So I guess one question, what's your favourite word at the moment? My new word is diaphanous. I love it. And it's because I've got into gardening since I've moved to Yorkshire. And it's all about delicate and light and things like that. So diaphanous is my favourite word. Jim, you got a favourite word?
I've always loved discombobulate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I like that word. It's a good word.
I think I might pass on this one. I have to really think about it.
I'll come back to you, Chanel. So I'm going to wrap things up. So, Chanel, just before we do, could you just give us the link to the Picatel app that you want our listeners and viewers to go to?
Yeah, so it's Picatel, so PICKATALE .co.uk.
There you go.
It's really, really simple.
So we'll put that in all the links. So just to conclude, I'll kind of throw loads of quick fire questions to you both to kind of catch you off guard, a bit like Timmy's mallet. See if I can get you to pause or hesitate. So, Jim, you'll have a lot of answers to this question. What project are you working on today?
Today, I'm in the House of Lords voting on the Police Crime and Sentencing Bill and voting mostly against it. I am also working on, I've got a Nord Anglia Advisory Board meeting. I'll be doing some work on EACT, and I'm sure there'll be some other projects along the way that I'll get involved in.
Thank you. Chanel, how about you?
I'm actually working with Siddiqui Education at the moment, and we're doing a national campaign called Books on the Box, and we're using five of the Picatel Sustainable Development Goals titles, and kids
and that's
will be creating
Siddiqui on Gogglebox, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So kids will be creating a 3-minute video trailer of their interpretation of the book, and they can win an iPad. So it's going to be such a good campaign to get them involved.
Jim, what's the book? For me, it was Sophie's World that really got me engaged with reading as a teenager. What book was it for you?
I would go with Zola's Germinal.
Germinal. Chanel?
As a teenager, I'll be honest, I didn't read a lot. Right, I started I know.
There's Picatel for you.
Actually,
what about a magazine?
No, it has to be the Cat in the Hat box set series.
I remember
my dad used to read that to me every single day. So it's The Poodles Eating Noodles was my favourite.
Okay, nice. top tip for parents to engage their children with reading?
Read to them every day.
Yeah.
Okay, Chanel?
I absolutely concur with that. You know, just even if it's for a couple of minutes, just read something, anything.
Okay, and my last question, Jim, what's the book you've never read that you want to? So it might be one of those epic, you know, doomsday books or whatever it would be. Which one have you never had time to? Are you saving for retirement?
Crikey. I guess I've always been too daunted to get into any James Joyce. Too slow and potentially boring, and I ought to have the patience to give it a proper go.
Right, well, there you go. Chanel, how about you?
Well, I've just got back into my fitness and, like, mindset and everything. So there's a book by David Goggins. It's Can't Hurt Me or something like that, and I really, really want to sit down but be in the right frame of mind to absorb the content.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, obviously in West Yorkshire now, so I'm in the Bronte land, having read Jane Eyre for my A-level English literacy, watched the film again just before Christmas. I need to pick the book up again, so that will be my answer. Right, I'm going to let you both go. Jim, you're super busy juggling lots of different things. Chanel, thank you for all your insights and your free reading at Picatel for free for parents and schools. So please download Picatel, everyone, and I hope you enjoy using the software. Thank you both for your time.
Thanks, Ross. Always great to see you. Take care.
Have a good day. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.